You're listening to the Tarlest End podcast, the only Reading FC podcast by fans for fans. Hello and welcome to the Tarlest End podcast, episode 6. My name is Dan Wimbush, otherwise known as Wimb. Welcome to the latest in our weekly podcast for all things Reading Football Club. As always, the song you've just heard at the top of the show was Biscuit Men by Violet Class, who are a local band of big Reading fans. If you want to hear any more of their music or check them out live, head to www.violetclass.com or follow the lads on Twitter at Violet Class. I'm joined, as always, by our two excellent co-hosts, Mr. Alan West, otherwise known as Westy.
No, I've not been sold, contrary to some of the rumours that are going around.
Yeah, we've managed to hang on to him. And we've also managed to hang on to another of our key signings, Tarlest End Deputy Editor Johnny Williams. Johnny, welcome.
Actually, I've moved to Palace, so unfortunately I'm dominating the midfield there now.
Unbelievable. You've joined the Palace exodus. Unbelievable. Did either of you two buy anything else in the transfer window? Pick up anything? Any bargains at the deadline day?
Lack of sleep from staying up till 11 o'clock. That was about all I picked up from the transfer day.
I think I picked up a pint of milk on my own. Got the deal just before the deadline.
Just got in there.
Sent the fax over.
Did you beat Hammond to it? Was he chasing it?
Yeah, he was. Trying to get that deal done. Right, well, before we delve into more transfer window talk, as I'm sure we will later on, let's first look back to the game last weekend. Reading went to Yeovil to play him in the league for the first time ever. And, guys, they picked up not only a win, but first away clean sheet since April of 2012. Not the most convincing performances. I was there. I didn't think it was great, but the 3 points were so, so important. We were saying that in last week's show. They got the job done. What are your immediate impressions of it?
I suppose there's two ways of looking at this game. You've gone away from home. You've ground out a result. And a lot of people say, well, you've not played at your best and you've got to win. You've got to take the positives from that. But most people that I spoke to, from my own opinion, I thought Reading should have been doing a lot better than creating one chance on goal, or one shot on goal, against a side that, let's face it, will be close to relegation, if not relegated this year. Again, it depends what you're in, if you're in the positive or the negatives, but I think Reading should be doing more against teams like that. But the 3 points, like we said last week, were much needed and a relief going into the international break.
I think the concerning thing for me, and this is a point that you raised last week, is whether we adjust our team to play someone, or whether we're strong enough that they should adjust their team to play ours.
Yeah.
And we saw that after 35 minutes, we went so far to adjust our team as to bring Gareth McCleary off and put Danny Williams on. Obviously, that worked out in the end, but it's still a little bit concerning that we worry that Adkins hasn't found his right team yet, and it seems that he might not even know which is the right team to put out on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, sort of pre-game, they were forced into a few changes. I'll just go through the team quickly. McCarthy, Cummings, Morrison, Pearce, Gunter, Guthrie, McCleary, Drenthe, Karachan, Lafondre and Blackman, with Danny Williams, as we've said, Hal Robson, Canoe and Hope Akpan all coming off the bench. Stephen Kelly was away following the birth of his child last week, and Wayne Bridge and Joby McAnuff were both missing through injuries. Sean Cummings at left back, guys. Is you happy with when he plays at left back?
I like Sean Cummings. I think he's been made a scapegoat. I've said this in the past on previous shows. I think sometimes he's been made a scapegoat and he's been dropped out of the side when he's played particularly well. Obviously, he's not left-footed. He's come in, and you'd have to say on the day he'd done a decent job. And I think he's got a bit of pace about him, Cummins. And I think when he's been in the side, he rarely let Reading down on the odd occasion, but then who hasn't? You know what I mean? So if he can come in and do a job for us, I think he's a great player to have around the squad.
I think the thing is when we lost 6-0 to Peterborough, actually, well, I think we should just banish any mention of that match from any future podcast.
I don't even know what match you're talking about, John.
Maybe I just dreamt it. But, you know, I think Cummings fell over or tripped someone up for one of the penalties and stuff, and you saw that performance and you thought, oh, good Lord. And then you see him starting again on Saturday. But, you know, by all accounts, he put up a decent, you know, solid performance, which is exactly what you want from the left-back, I think. It's dependable.
It's match fitness, though, isn't it, with these players that haven't played? It's match fitness. They haven't got it. A lot of teams have played 6-7 games now. They have, and there's a big difference between a match fit player and a fit player. And I think if Cummings has a run in the side, then he'd be match fit and he'd be just as good as anybody else. But obviously, when Bridge,
yeah, I still think he's more naturally a right back. And I think he'll stay the same. It'll be interesting actually, because you know he's had a couple of games in the side now. Chris Gunter's still not pulling up any trees at right back. Could you see him maybe displacing Gunter?
I'd see Kelly displacing Gunter before Cummings did, or I'd see Kelly going over to left back if Bridge is injured. And I think it's all going to get very sort of roundabouts if we get a centre-back injured and Bridge stays injured and other people have to move around in positions. Because quite honestly, if we get two or three injuries in the sort of back four, I honestly don't know what side we're going to put out.
And personally, there's not many players that can honestly say they've nailed down their position for the season at the moment. A bit of probably Cavajan, who's been played well in most of the games.
Well, even then, you've got Danny Williams knocking
on the door. Yeah, and you've got players knocking on your door. So no one in that side, and they know this themselves, because we've said earlier that they've been pulled in, put out. And even yesterday on the Saturday's game, you had a player coming off the pitch after 30 minutes.
Well, exactly that. And Johnny mentioned it earlier. I mean, it's one of my points from my 5 points from Yeovil that should be up by the time this gets released.
Fingers crossed.
Adkins continues to show his ruthless. Not, Gareth McCleary wasn't playing badly by any stretch of the imagination on Saturday. I think I gave him a 6 in the player ratings. He was doing his job. He had, I think, our best chance before he got hauled off.
He also does some good defending just before he got substituted. And the argument I would have about him getting taken off was he playing worse than Blackman and Drenter? It'd be up to your own opinion, but personally, I thought that neither of them two have done anything to stay on the pitch. And what message does it send him getting dragged off after 35 minutes? It's all very well later on after the game say, we've won the match and we spoke to Gareth and everything's all fine. But if I'd played reasonably well and I'd seen other players that weren't playing as well as me and I got dragged off for a tactical change, I wouldn't be happy about it, and I'm sure he wasn't.
I think the nice thing is that he is prepared to make that change. So many managers, and I can't really remember that many times that a Reading manager has made a first half sub. I think Pardew made a couple of subs once in a cup game about 10-15 years ago.
Well, Coughlin never made a sub before the 60th minute, did he?
It was consistent. So on the one hand, it was really good to see him saying, you know what, this isn't working, we need to change it up. And Williams did make a big difference, so you've got to give him credit. But yeah, a little bit uneasy that he gets it wrong in the first place.
And he got away with it because we managed to get a dubious penalty and we won the game.
What did you make of the pen?
You seen him give him.
Yeah.
It was never clear cut, but I think sometimes, and I've said this when Reading were smaller clubs, I think sometimes big clubs in this division will get them sort of half decisions, whereas Yeovil, maybe they wouldn't.
I think you were already seeing the phrase even itself out. You know, the one against Watford was a little bit dicey. This one was also a little bit dicey, and you know, if we're keeping a tally, perhaps it's one all so far.
I think, you know, the player goes across him. If you give the referee an excuse, you can't complain if it gets given.
Yep.
If he's absolutely nowhere near him and Lafondre takes a tumble, then you say, yeah, that's out of order, you know, he should be booked or whatever. But the reaction of some of the Yeovil fans were going crazy on Twitter afterwards, calling him everything under the sun, saying he's the biggest cheat in this division, etc., etc. Got to feel a little bit sorry for them, but I'm sorry. I said, you go across a player like that in the box, you give the referee an excuse, and they do get given. So, and he took the penalty well as well. He's a good penalty taker, Lafondre.
Well, he's a good finisher, but he has to be in a position to finish. And like I said, we didn't create too much otherwise. And I still think we need, and well, we're going to talk about it later, but he still needs someone who can create for himself up front, and we don't seem to have that at the moment.
Yeah, generally the performance, as I said, was poor. I think the two centre-backs did what they needed to do. They were still a little bit exposed when the ball was getting played through at pace, but both Pearce and Morrison both made really good challenges sort of running back. McCarthy was brilliant. Again,
mate. McCarthy is brilliant.
A couple of big saves, and you know, we've got him a lot to thank him for in this win. I gave him my man of the match, and I think he's been voted it by the readers as well. Top notch performance once again.
He's a top notch goalkeeper, and we're lucky to have kept hold of him, really, when there's Premier League clubs that are buying goalkeepers, and I think he's probably the best young goalkeeper in England at the moment.
Johnny, I know it's a point that you raised a couple of weeks ago, talking about Royston Drenthe as a bit of a luxury player. This was almost a perfect example of it, because he wasn't really tracking back. He was often just in space, just nobody around him at all and no hope of getting the ball. He still had a couple of moments of magic, but it was really a bit of an ineffective game for Royston. Can you see an argument for maybe leaving him out of the side for games like that? Or do you think you've got to play him and hope he comes off?
The thing is, you look at this division, I don't think there's a game you can say, oh, you know, we're playing a bottom of the table side at home, we can leave him out for this one, or you know, we're playing a top of the league side away, perhaps we need someone more combative in the midfield, because all of those games, I think there's a place for Royston Drenthe. But it is a little bit of a concern at the moment that for whatever reason he seems to go missing for a long, long time in the game. You know, he'll do something absolutely amazing, he'll get the crowd on side, but then often he'll not do anything for 5 or 10 minutes. And I think he's, you know, he's still finding his feet. You can see with everything that he's doing, he's always heading straight towards goal. He always wants to have that shot. I think that, you know, there's a big sort of maybe chip on his shoulder, maybe just a burden on his shoulder that he wants to he wants to impress, and he wants to, you know, he's clearly grateful to Reading for giving him the chance to show what he can do, and he just wants to repay that. But it's a very difficult one, because I don't think he's quite a striker, he's not quite a winger, and he's not quite that sort of guy in the middle that we need at the moment.
What he's done in the last four or five games, what has he proved to anyone that he used to be a Real Madrid footballer? He hasn't done an awful lot, as far as I'm concerned. There's sometimes that you can get away with carrying players to a certain extent, and sometimes you can't. Now, I said it a few games back against Watford when we changed formations, and he was supposed to be tracking back at points, and he wasn't. He was what I call cheating, where he's standing up the pitch, which gives teams a problem, because they're thinking, well, we don't want him getting loose, and they will genuinely bring someone back to play against him. But on the flip side, when a team's chasing the game like Watford were, they were prepared to let him go and stand up the pitch while they bombed forward. Now, if you ain't going to defend in them sort of times, then you're going to have to take him off the pitch.
Yeah, I almost think that, it sounds a bit weird, I don't think the team's quite good enough to get the best out of Royston at the moment, because they're not playing through balls to him. He's not getting the ball to his feet enough at the moment, and that's still a bit of a problem. Hopefully when the team is able to retain possession a bit more and keep it turning over and pulling players out of position a bit more, that'll Royston's game will improve with it. But at the moment, he's not really clicking. Just another point, his set pieces aren't
poor.
Very good.
They were poor the other day. And again, it's going to cost you eventually, because there was a number of occasions he had a chance to put decent ball into the box and he didn't do it.
Do you think we're missing a set piece taker at the moment?
Well, we've had Shorey and players out in the past, haven't we, that can hit a free kick, and Hart, exactly. And we haven't got that at the moment. And you can't see anyone scoring from a free kick at the moment unless he pulls off a great free kick. But like I say, he's overwritten a lot, he's underwritten it a lot. Hopefully with time, match fitness again, it'll get better. But from Yeovil showing, it wasn't good at all.
Yeah, he's still a real class act, and I hope he does come off. And you know, he hasn't scored in five games, so he's overdue.
Yeah, I think the problem with him is that he needs to be in a free role. He needs to be able to float around the pitch and cause teams problems by getting involved in the play. Now, have we got a side that can afford him to be in a free role? I don't think we haven't, because we haven't got that striker like Jason Roberts was 2-3 years ago. Well, 2 years ago, where you could hit him and you could play off him.
Yeah.
There's no one like that. Yeah. And if you add them, if he come back and does that, then Drentver can play in a free role. But at the moment, you just can't.
Or if you get Pogrebnyak firing, which is, I suppose, the point we'll have to come on to a bit later.
Yeah.
Just a sort of final point on Yeovil, just give a bit of praise for Yeovil as well. I think I've done probably about 30-40 grounds in my time. And Yeovil was possibly the friendliest I've ever been to. Fantastic stewarding, open, friendly. Car parking right outside the ground for £2. Mm. Stewards were coming up to us after the game. We were sat in the car. There was a bit of a queue getting out. And they were coming over every 5 minutes and apologising for us having a delay to get out of the ground. And just a really nice day. Good family club. Thought the programme was great value as well. Top credit to Yeovil. And, you know, fantastic. They almost showed clubs like Reading up a little bit. And Reading aren't. I'm not saying Reading are a bad club. They just got voted the fifth best match day experience in the Premier League. They do a lot of things well. But if you see a little tiny team like Yeovil only charging £2 for parking and they're getting pittance, you think, could maybe Reading drop their parking prices or subsidise buses, things like that?
Parking prices at Reading are a joke. It's far too much money. I mean, I remember going to Wigan. My probably favourite away day experience was going to Wigan. I've been there about 3 or 4 times now. And their stewards are very much staying. The police were always very chatty and friendly. And their parking at the time, it was free, and that was right outside the ground as well. So Reading are overcharging. I've said this before.
Yeah. I think just on the Yeovil point, you know, as we spoke to our Yeovil fan last week, they're just loving life at the moment.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's going to play
journey for them.
Oh, yeah.
Also, big credit, any team that has the Wurzels sing their song gets an absolute massive thumbs up for me.
Oh.
Brilliant. And it still puts us to shame with that journey at Wembley. Mm. Oh, cringe, horrible. Right, anyway, well, we'll get chatting about transfer window very soon. But first, it's time to speak to Charles from Get Reading, Charles Watts. Unfortunately, Charles can't join us this evening. He's got other commitments. I think maybe he was dodging you, Westy. You might have given him a bit of a grilling.
He needs to be dodging me.
Yeah, exactly. And we also nearly got Johnny Fordham on. Nearly got him on the street, but he once again slipped in it. We couldn't get the deals done.
No.
We're the same, you know. It went to the wire and we couldn't get him on. But anyway, I spoke to Charles yesterday to get his thoughts on the Yeovil game and on the transfer window.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Charles, thanks again for joining me. I suppose you were a very busy man yesterday on a frantic transfer deadline day.
Yeah, it was a little bit crazy, really. A bit of a late night, although, to be honest, not much actually happened.
Oh, no. We'll pull the curtain back and say, obviously, we're recording this on Tuesday night. So if anything major breaks and we announce 5 free transfer signings in the morning, then we might be made to look a little bit silly.
But as it stands, Reading, the transfer window slams shut, and Reading have got what they sort of went in with. Well, they, apart from the early June signings, that's it.
That so, is it, yeah.
A slightly different from what we expected, given all the words and messages coming out from Nigel Atkins in the club recently. How surprised were you that Reading didn't do any business?
I'm very surprised. I was quite staggered, actually. You know, I just thought it was an absolute given that something was going to happen. I thought when Nigel said three on Thursday, I thought that might be pushing it, you know, because there's not much time left. But I never did I imagine they were going to end up with no one at all. So, yeah, very surprised. And let's hope it doesn't come back to bite them.
I mean, you were doing a great job keeping us all updated on Twitter and on the blog, on the website throughout the day. How close were we to any of the deals that were mooted? I know names like Becchio, Cameron Jerome were popping up through the day. Do you know if we were anywhere with those deals, or were they just paper talk in the end?
I don't think they were. I don't think they were very close to me. And so from what I've heard from today, pretty much the only thing on the agenda was Momo Sissoko. There was nothing else really going on, which is a bit of a surprise. I mean, I was in touch with a lot of people up the sort of Stoke end of the country early on in the morning, and you know, they were fairly convinced there was some interest in Cameron Jerome, but according to what I found out today, there wasn't. So I mean, that's very surprising, because you know, just to be going for a central midfielder, which, let's face it, they're fairly well stocked on that in that regard at the moment, I was really surprised. So I mean, it was just a really surprising day from start to finish, really. I thought it was going to be hectic. I thought I was going to be getting phone calls left, right and centre. I'd left massive pages in the paper thinking I was going to be filling them with pictures of, you know, new signings holding their shirts up, and it's not to be. I mean, I think it's just surprised everyone, really. I think it's left quite a few supporters, judging by the reaction on Twitter, are very angry about it.
I think the club are slightly under siege in the past couple of days, and yeah. It might take a bit of a PR sweetening exercise to get them back on side for Brighton. Although in saying that, if when the loan window opens and they go and sign three or four, then I think it'll all be forgotten.
Yeah, I think that's very much on the agenda. But you know, I've been saying that during the actual window itself, that it was very much on the agenda. But again, I've been told today that the loan deals are very much being looked at. But then that's a little bit goes against what Nigel Atkins said not too long ago when I asked him about loan deals, when he said, you know, he prefers to promote from within. The only reason he'll touch loans is if he can find a top quality player. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
I was going to ask you, I mean, obviously, you know, I suppose you're not privy to the exact mechanisms of what's going on, but what do you think that the hold up was and the reason for the lack of activity? Was it simply that they didn't think there was value for money in the market? Do you think they had to wait until they sold and then the money didn't come in quick enough? If you had sort of put your finger on why they've done no business, why would you say?
I think that's hard for me to say, to be honest. I mean, you know, Nigel was very keen to get the business done. He wouldn't have said what he said on Thursday, that he wanted three players in, and then again on Saturday after the Yeovil game where he said that he thought they were close to some of his targets. So I think he was very keen for it to happen, and yet it hasn't. So I think that raises a few questions, doesn't it? I think you've got to look at, is Nigel being backed by who? What, by the owner? I mean, I certainly think you have to start looking at Anton, really, with this. I mean, just looking at the transfer fees that have been paid so far, I mean, it doesn't amount to much, does it? You've got about 700,000 for Danny Williams. Royston was a free, Wayne Bridge was a free, and we're talking about Momo Sissoko at the moment, which, to be honest, I'm not sure is going to happen. But if it did happen, again, it would be a free. So it raises a few questions about Anton and about just, you know, how much of his money he's willing to put on the line here. So I don't know. It's just a transfer window that has just raised a lot of questions, isn't it? And I think it's going to take a couple of months to get those questions answered, if they are answered.
You know, at the moment, this is the squad we've got. Honest appraisal, do you think the squad's good enough as it stands?
Well, I do think it's good. You know, it's not a weak squad. You look at that squad. I mean, I was looking, I sort of took a step back today and looked at the squad list in the programme, and it's a good squad. There are obviously positions that need to be strengthened. The striker position, I mean, a forward needs to come in, really. And again, I presume that with this, looking into the loan market now, that's going to be the first thing they look at, is getting a forward in. We all know there needs to be a forward come in. And with the departure of Mariappa, then you've got to say the light at centre-back. But I think those two positions, maybe a little bit of cover on the left-hand side for Wayne Bridge as well, But sometimes you can get a centre back who can also play left back, so maybe they can look at that. But it's not a weak squad. You know, this isn't crisis time. Well, it shouldn't be crisis time. This group of players at Reading have got a perfectly good enough to mount a serious bid for promotion this season. So it's not all doom and gloom. And there's a lot of anger at the moment. There's a lot of frustration 24 hours after the window shut. But I think you sort of take a little bit of a step back from it, get the emotion out of it. And it's not doom and gloom. This isn't disaster time. Far from it. You know, the club's got a very good chance of getting promoted this season. I think that's what, now the window's shut, everyone's got to start focusing on now. Because if the fans start getting upset, if they start sort of, you know, making their feelings known, which they're perfectly entitled to do, but if they do, that sometimes that can cause sort of unrest in the stadium and make home games not a nice place to be at. And, you know, and that all filters down to the team. So I think it's quite important here that the club just sticks together. It's a case of, look, transfer window's done, it's shut. Hopefully some business is going to happen in terms of loans or free agents or whatever. But let's just focus on the aim that now, and that aim is to get promoted.
I mean, hopefully, I mean, one of the things that we've been sort of suggesting throughout the summer almost is that if the window did slam shut and people like Pavel Pogrebniak were still at the club, well, now they're in a unique position now, because obviously I can't see Pav going on loan somewhere in the Championship. So on paper, he's now either got to bang in a load of goals for Reading to get a move somewhere and get him back on the radar, or he just sits and sulks on the bench. And I'd like to think it's the former.
Well, it should be. I mean, it's a massive part of what Nigel Adkins has to do now. Is he's got to find a way of getting Pogrebniak involved. You know, he's got to get him scoring some goals. He's got to reinvigorate him. I mean, you're talking about an experienced Russian international player here. He shouldn't be sulking around and, you know, scoring 2-3 goals a season. You've got to be looking. The money he's being paid, whatever it is, and I know the club sort of look at the figure that's banded around on his wages and say, oh no, it's not that. Whatever the wage is, it's a big wage. He's got to start earning it now. And I think it's such a key part in the season is Nigel trying to get the best out of Pogrebniak. He's got to start scoring goals, especially if a striker doesn't come in. It's a really important thing. And, you know, how he does that, I don't know. If it's a case of putting your arm around him, he's a big bloke to get his arm around, but putting your arm around him and just trying to get involved, trying to make him feel part of the group again, because I see him sort of wandering around after games when he's not come on, and he just doesn't look happy. He looks like he doesn't want to be there, and you've got to get out of that attitude, because if you've got that attitude on, you're not going to do well, you're not going to score goals, you're not going to enjoy your football. And so it's a really important thing now, I think, that the window's shut, the strikers are there, need to get the goals, and you know, you can't have a player being paid whatever the wage is, 60 grand, 30 grand, whatever it is a week. He can't just be sitting there doing nothing. He's got to get on the pitch and he's got to start scoring goals.
Hey, fingers crossed that happens. I think that, you know, it's a reciprocal arrangement. So he starts scoring goals for Reading do well, and then, you know, he gets back in the shop window if he does really want to go. So I think it'll be good for both parties if he gets back on the goal trail. Sort of looking back a bit further, I mean, the Yeovil game now seems an absolute age away given all the angst of deadline day. What did you make of that performance? I mean, Reading got the win they desperately needed, but at least for me, it wasn't an overly convincing performance.
No, it was far from a convincing performance. It was a pretty horrible performance, to be honest, but the performance didn't matter in that one. After the week that Reading had, after the defeat at Blackpool and then the drub into Peterborough, they had to get a win no matter what happened. It was a tough game in a way, because it was, Nigel sort of hinted at it afterwards, and it was a game that everyone looked out for. Yeovil got to be 3 points, and so they're on a bit of a hide into nothing really, Reading, and they went up there, they didn't play well. I think Alfie's penalty was the first shot on target in the whole game. I think there was one after that that sort of dribbled to the goalkeeper. I think they had two shots on target the whole game. Yeah, and so, and I think it was 77 minutes ago, and that was the first time the keeper had to do anything really, and that was pick the ball out of the net. So it's far from convincing. And you got to say, Yeovil were probably the better side, but at the end of the game, it's 1-0 Reading, and that's all that matters. And it is a really, really important win, because if they hadn't got the points there, then suddenly you're looking at 5 games in, one win. You know, it didn't look too good, but it's now you're looking at a nice 8 points, not too far off the top. And as long as you can back that win up now, then it's all, it all could start looking a little bit rosier again.
did you make of, Atkins made the bold call to take off Gareth McCleary in the first half. Did you get a chance to chat with either McCleary or Atkins about that?
I didn't. I was actually chatting to McCleary before the game, just before the away fans were let in. We were sitting behind a goal having a little bit of a word because I was walking around to get my pre-match pie after setting up, and Gareth had just come out with his headphones on and was taking a look at the pitch, and I sort of sat down for a good 10 minutes just talking about golf and everything, and he was talking about how his brother used to play there as a non-league team, and he was really looking forward to the game, so it certainly didn't pan out the way he hoped. I thought it was a little bit harsh, actually, because I thought if anyone was going to come off, it was going to be Royston Drenthe, because he had a very poor first half, I thought, Royston. And I thought Gareth actually was playing all right. And I didn't think Nick Blackman had the finest of first half either. So, but, you know, Nigel made a decision, he's a manager, and in the end it worked out to be a good one, because it did narrow the game up a bit, and Redden certainly started getting more of a foothold in it. And in the end, I thought Danny Williams was the best player on the pitch at full time.
Another thing, we've got our vote for August Player of the Month up on the website at the moment. Who would you give the nod to if you were picking the
six? Oh, it's interesting.
I'll give you some hints. Danny Guthrie is currently leading the way with the voters.
Yeah, so that doesn't surprise me, because I think Danny and Gem have had a really good solid start, which made me even more surprised at the Momo Sissoko links yesterday, which just didn't make any sense to me, really. That doesn't surprise me at all. I do think Royston has been a constant danger, but he's flitted in and out of the sides, flitted out in and out of the games that he's played in, but I think he's been a talent. But I think Alex McCarthy's had a very good start to the season. I thought he was brilliant at Yeovil, McCarthy. He didn't really have to make too many saves, but when he did make them, he made them well. But his handling was fantastic. He gathered every single cross that came into that box. I thought he was really impressive. One of those four. But, Guthrie, it sounds good to me. Guthrie or Carrickan, I've been very impressed with.
Oh, there we go. I said Guthrie's leading. I think Jem's second at the moment. I think either one of those would be a very deserving candidate. Yeah. I'd love to give them a crate of champagne, but alas, the budget's not quite stretched out. So there we go. And just finally, anything to look out for in the paper? I said this will probably be coming out on Thursday. Okay. So anything later in the week? Are you going down to Hogwood this week, or is
there? Yeah, well, I hope so. Although I haven't actually been given the complete green light with that, because obviously it's a little bit different this week with the Oman game and a lot of the players away on international break, but I hope so. In tomorrow's paper, which will be yesterday's paper when this comes out, obviously we got I managed to grab a quick word with Nick Hammond today about the transfer activity or lack of transfer activity. So we've got quite a bit of stuff in him there, sort of defending the club a little bit, and also talking about the Momo Sissoko transfer. Also a competition for the Brighton game, actually. We've got 10 pairs of tickets up for grabs. So if you want to try and get in for free, pick up a paper and enter the competition. The question's not exactly the hardest, so I don't think you'll struggle to do that. That's about it, I think.
Brilliant. And where can we follow you on Twitter?
Usual, @Charles_Watts.
Brilliant. Charles, thanks very much. And hopefully we'll speak to you in a couple of weeks' time.
Yes, definitely. Speak to you soon.
Brilliant. Cheers, mate. Ta-da.
Bye.
The view from the Tarnhurst end. Recapping all this week's action.
Thanks again to Charles. And hopefully we'll speak to him again when we record the next episode, which should hopefully be in a couple of weeks' time. But we'll come along to that a bit later on. Right. Now to, I suppose, the main event. The transfer window. Dun, dun, dun. We haven't got Jim White here. We haven't got any. We haven't got a shot of Big Ben.
No ticking clocks. No windows slam shut.
We are all in bright yellow, though.
We'll say this: if Chris Kamara was here, he'd say unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was the general reaction. For those of you that have been away and maybe not known what went on transfer deadline day, well, not an awful lot. Adrian Mariappa left the club. He joined Crystal Palace for about $3 million. As we talked to with Charles, we were linked with a few players like Cameron Jerome, Luciano Becchio, a few players like the Billy Sharp name kept coming up, and a lot of money went on with the bookies anyway. But as the day ticked on, nothing really happened. Then out of nowhere, the Mohamed Sissoko rumours started, and then people started taking pictures through windows at the Medeski Stadium. I think what's been dubbed Bushgate.
That guy's my new hero. If you're listening.
Yeah, top papping. But yeah, bizarre. I think the fact that that was the most exciting thing that happened on deadline day sums it up completely.
Tells you what we need to
know. And Reading didn't get any transfers over the line. And they mentioned, you can read on the Get Reading website now and in the paper that's come out yesterday, Nick Hammond said they were talking to Sissoko. They're hoping they'll get it done. But because he's a free agent, they can sign him at any time. And the loan window reopens again next week. But no permanent signings. There was a lot of anger on Twitter throughout the day. People were getting impatient from 9 o'clock in the morning. And by the time it got to midnight and nothing had happened, I thought the thing was going to explode. A lot of anger directed towards the club. One man even started a petition saying, get rid of Nick Hammond and convince Anton to spend some money. It has that feeling of that where's the money gone situation we had a couple of years ago.
We've had before, yeah.
Yeah, and we've been here before. But while, you know, a lot of people were putting a negative spin on deadline day, it's important to remember it was a window. It wasn't just the day. So while people are focusing on the negatives that we didn't get anyone over the line on transfer deadline day, what do you two think? What positives can we take from this transfer window as a whole?
We kept who Reading fans think is the best or the second best or the third best English goalkeeper in the league / in the world. We got a new left back who was, by all accounts, Brighton's left player of the year last year, and definitely an upgrade on Shorey and Ian Hart. We got in Royston Drenthe, who on his day can be one of the most exciting players, and, you know, has already, I'm sure, sold about 20,000 shirts by himself. We got in Danny Williams, who's a USA international. I think the squad just as a whole is a lot stronger. And as Charles didn't say it on his podcast just now, but he said on Twitter yesterday, if we got rid of two players at the start of the window and then signed those three yesterday, everyone would be a lot more happy. And as you said just now, it is about the whole window. It's about the whole 3 months. It's about all the groundwork you put in. And, you know, perhaps we will see Sissoko come in. And if he does, then that's another cracking signing. But
it's funny, actually, me and John had a discussion in the car earlier about Charles saying that if we signed these three players yesterday, it'd been a lot different spin on things. And I said, yeah, that's true. But the problem is now, we signed them three players at the start of the season. So we now know which positions we're weak in with those three players in the squad. Mm. And we all knew that we need to get a striker in. We spoke about it earlier in the show. We spoke about it since the start of the season. There's not enough goals in that forward line. Blackman doesn't look like he's up to the job so far. Lafondra, I've got my concerns with. And Pogrebniak is going to need to step up to the plate now. Because, yeah, like Charles said on there, Pogrebniak now is he should be the main man at that side. He should be the player that's getting 20 goals a season. Yeah. He should be able to lead the line. And we said this a few weeks back as well, when we talk about the Man City game, when he led the line perfectly. Now, if he can do that in a championship, he will be a major threat. The reason he's not doing it, it's not good enough as far as I'm concerned. He should be now saying to Atkins, right, banging on a door saying, put me up front and I'll show you what I can do. That's what he should be doing.
Exactly.
And if he'd done that, it'd be like having a new striker, it'd be like having a new signing.
Yeah.
Because he's capable, it's whether he wants to do it or not, which is a problem.
I think we've also got to look at the players that did leave the club. Two, obviously we let a load go at the start of the season. I think we discussed that in the first week of the show, the likes of Church, Hunt, etc. And we sort of agreed there was nobody that we were desperate to keep. Two left in the last week of the window. By the time we recorded last week's show, it looked like Kebe was going to be off. Obviously, that all happened really quickly, and he left over the weekend to Palace. Somewhere between $750,000 and $2 million. Don't know, you never know how these deals are structured. But, you know, say on the positive side, say we did get $2 million. And then Mariappa as well, around about $3 million as well. What were your thoughts on those two leaving the club?
Well, Kebe, to start with, if you're going to put a positive spin on it, they spent $400,000 on him 5 years ago. He's been injury prone for the last year, and they've got 1.5, 2 million for him, for a player that's hardly played for us. We haven't missed him because we haven't seen him. I think he was the best winger now at the club at the time. He's gone. Mariappa, what worries me about both these players, they both must be high earners. And when people are talking about the money going out of the club, these two players must have been on good wages. Mariappa was signed in the Premier League, so we don't know what was in his contract, but there was other clubs fishing around, bigger clubs than Reading, that didn't take him. Fulham, for example. They didn't take him, and Reading did. And Kebe, he just signed a new contract when Anton signed up. That was his key to getting in, if you remember. Anton said, I will keep the best players at this club. He said that. He signed Kebe straight away because there was a dispute over his contract. Now, the worrying thing for me is, if we haven't signed anybody and we've got rid of two potentially big earners that are, realistically, bottom of the Premier League footballers, top of the Championship, which we've lost, why, if we had to get rid of these big earners, and if we got rid of them, is it because there's a lack of funds at the club?
I think I think while those two would have been big earners, I think you've got to remember the really big earners that are still left at the club.
Yes, but who was going to take Paul Grebniak?
Well, this is it. And
that's what I'm saying. They had to get rid of somebody.
And this is something we expressed after the Peterborough game, that worry. And also there was a really good article written today on the Two Unfortunates website. They cover the whole of the Football League. One of the editors there is actually a Reading fan, and he wrote a piece on Reading, sort of explaining the virtues of how Reading have had a good window. And he was saying that Peterborough and the whole starts this season completely destroyed any sale value that the likes of Pogrebniak, Gorks, Federici would have had. And sadly, these are players with big long contracts. And Reading, as much as you know they want to say that TSI have got money, as Nick Hammond said today in Get Reading, they've lost 30 million in revenue. They can't necessarily take too many gambles. And when you've got Federici sat there on, well, apparently he was on 30 grand a week in the Premier League, even with a clause, he's going to be on 20 grand a week.
Yeah.
Pogrebniak, there's a lot of dead money still at the club.
Yeah.
And the only hope is now that those players turn it round. Well, Federici's probably not going to get a chance, but Pogrebniak at least, and puts his, well, gets a value again.
But interesting thing for me, Joe, sorry to butt in there, but what do you think of Mariappa? Because I think he was told at the start of the season that they had no plans for him at the club. Not that he's not the probably best centre-back at the club, because I think clearly he is. But they probably said to Mariappa, look, we need to get ready. We need to get you off the wage bill. You're free to go. Speak to your agent, see where he can get you.
I think he was one of the most saleable assets we had.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting if you sort of believe in conspiracy theories and look at the development of it. He wasn't in the first two squads, I don't think. Questions started to float around about him. And then suddenly we see him on the bench. He pops up on the bench. I can't remember if he... did he play against Peterborough?
He did. Yeah. Badly. Badly.
Fair enough. But, you know, I think... certainly for the start of it, you know, Nigel was making the point essentially publicly that, you know, he's our fourth choice centre-back, even though clearly he wasn't actually our fourth choice centre-back. And so, you know, that kind of says that perhaps we're trying to keep him fresh or keep him out of danger so that someone else will...
To be fair on Mariappa, I was hearing bits and pieces from the club at the end of last year that he was one of the players that was really not happy with the direction the club was going. So whether that was true or not, obviously, you know, I don't know. But whether that's developed, and as you say, he's decided at the start of the season he's going to be off.
The problem is now, when you look at those centre-backs, you've got Morrison, who's extremely inexperienced. I don't think he's played 50 professional games yet. Not a championship and premiership level, definitely not. Still a young centre-back. You've got Pearce, who, don't forget, not so long ago, wasn't even in the plans of the side when he wouldn't sign a contract. You never see Pearce for months.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Gorks, who I don't rate, and got relegated with Wolves earlier in the back end of last season and clearly doesn't look like he's up to the job. Now, if one of them was to get injured, who is going to play centre-back? Where are the centre-backs?
Well, I don't know. The biggest youth prospects currently at Aberdeen, Michael Hector. But I suppose, I mean, this is the point to remember. And this is kind of why the window's almost a false window. This loan window reopens next week before the next league game. It's a bit stupid if you ask me. If the whole point of the transfer window is to stop movement around and stop clubs doing business, it doesn't work in the championship.
The whole point of the transfer window is just to generate publicity and feed.
Well,
you know,
it inflates prices as well.
Yeah. But Reading can go out. The point is that Reading can go out. I'm not terribly worried if they're happy saying that Pearce and Morrison are the two best centre backs and they're happy with that partnership. You know, each their own opinion on that.
Yeah.
But if that is what they're saying, and we're just worried about backup, I'm not particularly worried about that because they can just go out in the loan market, get a loan player in. A bit for a month, or if it's a long-term injury, take the 3 months up till January and then buy somebody.
But this is the thing, you say, can we? And or we can get a centre-back in. But if we could or would have got a striker in, and we could or would have got a centre-back in. I don't know whether it's, whether it's Nick Hammond or whether it's the manager or whether it's the chairman or what's going on. But for whatever reason, we haven't been able to secure any of the targets. You know, Nigel said on Saturday or last Thursday, as Charles said, he wanted three more players in, and we were talking to them. None of those have materialised, and something's gone wrong somewhere.
And we've also been told in the past that they don't particularly like the loan window.
Yeah.
So, again, it looks like a change of tactic all of a sudden, just to placate the fans, because they've been getting a lot of abuse on Twitter and Facebook.
Quite possibly. I suppose that brings us to the negatives. And look, if Reading don't want to do their business on deadline day, that's absolutely fine. We've mentioned it's a window. They've had months to do their business. And if they think, oh, there's no value, we're not going to rush it through, absolutely fine. I think what the massive objection from lots of people has been was what you've just said, Westy. For weeks, they've been banging on, saying we're going to get two or three in. And they weren't saying at the time, oh, we're probably going to use the loan market to get two or three in. They're saying they're looking, you know, to get their business done. it's turned out they haven't. And what for me was even more annoying was the complete radio silence that was coming out of the club on deadline day. There was nothing on the Twitter feed. There was nothing on the website. Again, we don't want it the situation where the club has to feel they have to put every single details and negotiations going on. But
you don't want Nigel Adkins out of the car window.
No,
what's happening, Nigel? Go on.
Exactly. But come 6, 7 o'clock, they could have just put a steer up just to calm everyone down, saying, look, it's turned out we haven't really been able to get a lot of business done. We're still hopeful getting one player in, but it's going to be tight. Stay tuned and we'll keep you updated. Instead, all we had was updates from an under 21 game, and at 2 o'clock the next day, they came out with the Sissoko stuff. Now, if you build the fans up to such an extent and then don't give them anything and leave them to stew, that's why they've got such a negative reaction.
Well, you're asking for trouble, aren't you?
Yeah.
There was deafening in their silence, because normally the club is very key to publicity is the key, you know what I mean?
Well, they still found the time to update us on how the under 21s
exactly.
are getting on.
But they left it completely, and it raised a lot of suspicion for me. And then it got to the stage, we got to 11 o'clock, I thought maybe they've done something and they kept it quiet and so they can release it sort of when it's definitely signed and sealed. He was talking about the Sissoko stuff. Now, Johnny Fordham, funnily enough, I was winding him up on Twitter about, he was complaining that, you know, signing these big name players all of a sudden, and he was the sort of person who was moaning about buying players from Cork.
But hey, we can bring Carl Shepherd back for loan. Let's not forget this massive signing.
But the worrying thing for me about Sissoko, and even Paul Grebnak, is who is buying the players at Reading? Who is the one who's pushing transfers through? Because I don't think McDermott wanted Paul Grebnak. I think he's a Russian international. He might have been a mate of Anton's. He might have known him from the scene.
Well, I think Ryan said that Anton was instrumental in helping get Pogrebnik.
And same as Wilson Drinter. He was playing in a Russian side. He probably seen him a couple of times, thought he's a good player, had a good background. I'm sure Anton is pushing a lot of these signs. I'm not saying he's making the signs, but I'm saying, look, I think we need to look at this player. We need to look at that player. And for Sissoko, all he's really done is raise his profile, because he's come to Reading, he's been pictured.
He's got a free transfer out of it as well.
He's got a free transfer. You know he's going to be asking 56 grand a week. And will Reading give someone 50, 60 grand a week to be in midfield, which is already top heavy?
No, it's just, I don't really know what to say almost at times. I said before we started recording, I almost felt like a little bit of a mug, because at the start of the day, from the Twitter account, I was saying, you know, keep calm, guys. It's deadline day. We've got hours to go, because people are getting on it from 9 o'clock in the morning saying, where's the transfer? Where are the deals? Where are the rumours? And, you know, your faith was slowly eroded. And as I said, it's just been expectation management that's let them down. I mean, we've raised, you know, we spent a good 5-6 minutes talking about the positives of the window. And there were a lot of it from this window. And, you know, a question I raised today, look at the squad from 2011-12 when we weren't up as champions. This squad now, you'd still well, I'm taking this squad. And if we're, I don't know whether you two would agree, but if you think this squad is on a par with that championship winning squad, then maybe we shouldn't be grumbling too much. But I don't know. I think it's, they've not let us down, but they could have handled it better.
The other point that I wanted to make is, in the media, the management has come out and said, you know, before, we've missed out on certain targets, like Gary Hooper, etc. You know, he's made it very clear that he wanted to sign those players. They've also made it very clear that players would have to leave before players came in. So, in a sense, we were sort of backed into a corner by the fact that players needed to leave before we could bring people in. Obviously, it's not ideal that Jimmy Kebbe and Adrian Mariappa leave in the last 2 days of the window, because by then, you've almost got a dead market unless you're paying sort of 10 million for someone who then needs to find someone else to ratify the deal. And, you know, there are probably loads of deals at Premier League clubs, at Championship clubs, that collapse behind the scenes. Because
look at Manchester United.
It's like a housing chain, isn't it? If someone pulls out, then you've got to rebuild the whole chain again. And, you know, Shane Long was going to go to Hull before Romelu Lukaku went to Everton instead of West Brom. So that's just, you know, there are so many things happening. And,
I said, if Manchester United, the biggest club in this country, arguably, can't get more than Fellaini in, then it's not just Reading. I mean, initially I said, oh, is it time to ask about Nick Hammond's ability to bring players in? But maybe that's harsh, but it's not totally about him. It's about the money he's got, the market. There's more factors than that. And, you know, ultimately,
we're so quick to turn on Nick Hammond. It's 10 years ago. Yeah. He's getting 500k for Andy Hughes.
Hey, exactly.
And, you know, you got 5.5 million for Dave Kitson, 5 million for Ibrahima Sonko. You know, this is a guy who, as director of football, there's always been widespread praise from managers saying, you know, I go about my business, Nick goes about his. He gets the best deals for the club. you know, whether that's changed since Anton's come in, you know, possibly it has, but I don't think we can levy any blame at Nick.
Yeah, I've had this discussion about Nick Hammond many a times on previous shows. And Nick Hammond, all he is really is a middle manager. He gets told to do something and he gets told how much money he's got to do it. And if he hasn't got enough to do one or the other, then he can't do it. It's as simple as that. I mean, I'm sure he's great at his job. And I'm sure when Atkins says, this is where we need to look at it, go and investigate it. But if the money's not there for him to do it, like I say, if you're buying a house and you go and buy a house, you can have a look round, but if you ain't got no money to buy it, you're out, aren't you? Simple as that. It's just a middle management. I think his importance in the club is overhyped by the fans.
Yeah, just sort of rounded up then the transfer window to chat. One of my own personal frustration hasn't, and I was chatting to my old man about this on the drive home the other day, it's not so much that this window's ended on a bit of a bum note. It's, you almost get the feeling that every window, especially in the TSI era, is ending on a bit of a bum note. I mean, last summer we did do a lot early, but then it sort of fizzled out and we just got a load of, you know, really championship players, except, you know, maybe Pogrebniak. Then in January, obviously, had Gilfie Gate, Tom Ince. Again, they didn't get anything done.
No.
And once again, you know, they've not really got a lot done. They've not spent a great deal in this last three windows. And as Charles said, you've got to wonder how much money. Have you guys got any sort of doubts on TSI now? Or are we just, again, reading far too much into this?
Well, the question is, when you look at clubs like QPR, now QPR will go out and buy players. They say, well, this is who we're having, him, and him. And all of a sudden they turn up at the club. Now, they're obviously chucking money at it. They must be chucking money at it to get players from the Premier League to step down a level. All right, it was the Harry influence, blah, 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 good old Harry. He's got the money to chuck. He's done it before. He will chuck money at players to get them to come and play for his team. Now, the chances are, if you look at QPR squad and compare it to ours now, we ain't even in the ballpark with them, I don't think, because they've got backup after backup and they've got top Premier League players on that side, whereas we've got players that might be Premier League footballers. Yeah. You know what I mean? So they will probably get promoted. That's the difference. Now, you said about TSI, and we've had this before, the £10 million bid for Sigurdsson, and it's always very released at the back end of it when you think, did this really happen? Or are they just putting this out to make it look like they actually tried to do something? I mean, how much have they spent on players, money spent on players? And it's not all about, I said, the Bolton's.
Wages.
Yes, it's about wages, yeah. But I've said Bolton's way of doing things a few, sort of 10 years ago, they used to get big name players in on big money, but pay nothing. So I don't buy this, all their free transfer, so it's like a
no, you just need to look at the finance hole that Bolton are in now.
Exactly, but with Bolton, it worked for them for a certain amount of time. The problem I've got with TSI at the moment is they seem to release these press statements after the transfer window closes. And you've got, we made a £10 million bid for Sigurdsson, we made £8 million bid for Tom Ince. But if they're really doing this, why don't they do it the next transfer window?
Yeah.
If Shane Long's going for £5 million, why don't they think, I'll tell you what, why don't we try and get
They presumably had to budget for spending £10 million on Sigurdsson and then getting relegated anyway. So, yeah, but I mean, I suppose if we are being completely honest, when TSI very first came in, they did say, not a lot's going to change. We're going to keep running the club the way Sir John ran it. So maybe, you know, this is just how they're going to run it. And maybe we've all just been...
Well, if that's true, then you can't... They can't even say that now because they've brought in big players on big wages, which never happened maybe. Before. So, again, it's a lot of good publicity, but when they actually get to do anything, it never really happens.
The thing is, you know, with Reading, we always have those saleable assets. We always had people who we'd bring through and then sell for a profit. Mm. You can think through pretty much... 2006 to 2012, we sold at least somebody every transfer window, whether it was Doyle, Long, Kitson, Sigurdsson, Sonko, as I mentioned.
Mills.
Mills. We got a lot of money for them. But because we're bringing in these players who perhaps don't really have that much sale on value now, it's a very, very different climate. It's no longer sort of rough diamonds. It's people who we think are experienced and can come in and do a job straight away.
But again, you look at Pogrebniak, I thought looking at it, when he joined us in the Premier League, you think, right, he's on a big wage, but we've got him for nothing. So if we get relegated, hopefully, you'd have thought, if you'd had a good season, you could have got rid of him for 4 or 5 million, got all your money back. What hasn't happened, he hasn't had a good season, he's now tanked. No one wants him, and now they don't want to pay his wages either. So now he's a problem.
Yeah. I think, you know, John, I think you said off the air, one of the points people are raising is saying, QPR are spending loads of money, Wigan are spending loads of money, yada, yada, yada. But it's deceptive, isn't it? Because they've actually sold. They have had these saleable assets this summer to sell. And, you know, look at Wigan on deadline day, selling McCarthy.
Mm. Yeah, he's a good player as well.
So, you know, if you actually look at their net spend, I don't think there's an awful lot of difference. And also, those clubs had a bit longer in the Premier League as well than Reading. You know, it wasn't just one season. Yeah. So I think that's also, you know, important to consider. Overall, then, if you two were sort of grading the transfer window, taking it as a whole, you know, at
you know, on the A plus to F minus scale, where would you put it? Johnny, I'll go to you first.
I'd say 6.5 in that.
That's not on the A to F scale, Johnny.
On the A, oh, are you? Oh, okay, fair enough.
I'll 6 or 7, Johnny.
I'll go B minus.
B minus.
Is that, no, no. C plus.
Okay.
C plus. No, just because if you look at the squad and you look at without the injuries and without all the contract stuff, it's a decent squad. However, there are still a few problems that we need to address.
The problem for me is it's a weaker squad than the start of the transfer window because you've got rid of two players, like I said earlier, who are potentially Premier League footballers and you haven't replaced them.
Even when you bear in mind Drentha and Bridge.
Well, Bridge signing. Bridge was a good signing, again, but he's getting towards the back end of his career. And Drentha has proved nothing to me so far. Massard done a few little step overs and we thought he was the best player in the world as well.
Don't mention his name.
When he starts proving it, then great. And he should be. I mean, Jovel was singing Real Madrid, you're having a laugh. And at the moment, I think I'm not. A lot of people eulogising how good he is. What has he proved? Nothing, as far as I'm concerned.
On a scale of F to 10?
F to 10.
No, if on the scale, I think, you've got to say they were weaker than when they started. So, D.
D. I'm going to be slightly more positive. I'm going to give him a B minus. I think Bridge is better than what Hart was and what Shorey was. I think Williams is a better midfielder than, I suppose you could argue, to replace Leisurewood. And I think Drentha and Kebe, although we haven't seen it from Drentha yet, we've seen flashes. So I think that's a bit of a wash at the moment. And Drentha's a bit younger as well and has probably got more resale value.
Well, the potential's there, no doubt about it.
So I think the only area they've got weaker in is centre of defence. But then again, they did get Pearce on a new contract. And we've got to remember that we all thought he was off. So that's kind of, it's a bit of a new signing really there as well. So all in all, yeah, I think, you know, B minus. Could have done better. Deadline day was a bit of a letdown. But again, if we take it in a whole, I think they've done all right.
As an overall, sorry to butt in, as an overall of the transfer window, I was quite surprised to see Carlton Cole go back to West Ham. I don't know what that was all about.
Well, a lot. It's like Jermaine Pennant that back at Stoke scored the winner the other day.
I think strange.
Clubs are so quick to release these players, thinking they're dead wood, and then it turns out
what Simon Church has done. He's got a couple, hasn't he?
If he comes back to Tottenham, that'll be the end of it.
Oh, we'll ask one question though. Would you have, looking at the squad now, would you have Noel Hunt back in that squad?
No.
If he was happy to be a squad player. Yeah,
but what's Noel Hunt going to do? I mean, we're talking about.
What's Blackman done?
Yeah, but we're talking about missing a player that can play up front on his own.
What's Paul Grebniak done?
Yeah, but Hunt can't play up front on his own either.
Yeah, but you know he scores goals in the Championship. It's proven.
Yeah, with another striker, with a decent striker.
Well, maybe it could be Paul Grebniak's foil.
Oh, no, you're winding me up here. No, I'm not having it. Right, just before we move on then to the feedback, one other quick point. On the website at the moment, we're running the August Player of the Month vote. As I mentioned to Charles, Danny Guthrie's winning it at the moment. We're going to run it for the rest of the week. Who would you two give Player of the Month to? I think the shortlist includes Guthrie, Karachan, McCarthy, Drentha and Bridge. Any of those, or are you going to throw a wild card in?
I'll go straight for Karachan. My honest suspicion is that Adkins bought Williams as he thought Karachan might not be up to it.
Yeah.
And Karachan has surprised everyone, including me. You know, he grabbed two. Was it two against Watford? And
yeah.
He's just looked a totally different player. You know, it's funny how we always used to complain about how he'd always play the backwards or the sideways pass, but now he's playing those and I don't care.
No. I think Adkins is waiting for Karachan to have a bad performance so he can put Williams in. I really do. But he's not giving him that opportunity at the moment. But I would say over the course of the month, Alex McCarthy has been brilliant. I thought although he conceded three goals against Watford, it could have been more. And he made one brilliant save in that match.
Yeah.
Against Yeovil, we kept him in it. And against Blackpool, it was an unfortunate goal that went in. So I'm saying Alex McCarthy.
Yeah, I think I'd probably lean to McCarthy and then Karachan. But I mean, I think Guthrie as well has had a great month. Mm-hmm. So cast your vote. Head over to the website now. I said we'll keep the result. We'll keep the voting open until Friday, and then we'll announce it on the next episode of the podcast. So stay tuned for that. Right, now it's time to get some of your feedback as well as any other business.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Right, now it's time for some of your questions and feedback that you've been sending into the show. Thanks very much to everyone who's got in touch. Again, you've probably been hearing it throughout the show, but if you do want to get in touch with us, ask us a question, leave your feedback, you can either email us at thetarlhurstend@gmail.com, go onto the Facebook page, it's facebook.com/thetarlhurstend, and we're on Twitter at thetarlhurstend. We've also got a thread on the Royals Rendezvous and on Hobnob Anyone, so there's plenty of ways to get in touch. So
you know, thanks to everyone that's done that this week, and keep it coming. Right, we'll start off with the emails then. And Fresh Reading sends us he sends us quite a long one. I'll do my best to get through it. Right, he says, "Hi guys, starting with Yeovil, not the most promising performance by any means, but we managed the 3 points, which is all that matters. Elements of our game still need tweaking, but it's a step in the right directions. As for transfers, the main concern for me is that promises haven't been kept. Adkins went on record of saying 2 or 3 players will come in. However, I don't think it's as bad as some people are making out. Momo Sissoko was reported by a couple of sources, and you know, we've heard from Charles, and subsequently that has gone through. You know, there is interest there, so it'd be valuable experience at this level. His wage will be the only concern, and would he take a wage cut from his 80 grand a week, as Westy said earlier? As for the strikers, everyone wants to see. Well, free agents and loans are still an option, and there's some good quality players out there, e.g. Petrich. We have the likes of Ugwu as well to give a chance to, and I've always said I wouldn't mind seeing like Arsenal's Chuba Akpom on loan. The raw passion towards football in these youngsters is something money can't buy. Cox being the only backup centre-back is worrying though, so I'd like to see another defender come in. Striker and defender are my only ask, and you've got to think we may struggle to get playoffs if no one else signs. With the loans and free agents on short contract situation, I think these kind of deals can be enough to gain us promotion. And then if we don't go up, we can start fresh and look at players who will help us progress from there. We don't want to panic buy a load of championship players just for the sake of fans, as they'll probably end up being deadwood if we went up. That's my opinion on the current situation anyway. The question on everyone's lips, where are Anton's so-called millions?" Well, I think we've covered most of it. You know, as we said, loans might be an option. Well, I don't think Reading have ever really shown that they want to take a young player. I think Bertrand is about the only one I can remember where they've taken a young Premier League player.
And he's started every week. I mean, there's a young lad from Arsenal.
Benekophobia.
Yeah, but again, he was bit part, wasn't he?
Yeah, no, you look back at that window when we went up, and I think we got Roberts, who obviously started every week, but then we had people like Mullins,
Sifka,
and the Arsenal lad, Benekophobia, who didn't really play that much.
No.
So, that, you know, there's a question of bringing people in on loan and saying to them, "Oh, you know, you might play once in
Matthew
once
Connolly
in two.
As well.
Yeah, Matt Connolly as well. Actually, he played quite often for us.
Yeah, so he got injured. Yeah.
But
well, I suppose then you could look at, they've got form for bringing in loan players. If you look at it like that, they've done it in the past. They did bring in a lot that year just to make sure we went up, basically. It'll give us that extra push.
But I think those were all really squad options more.
Yeah. Well, we had a smaller squad then. We didn't have the sort of players we've got there now either.
Yeah. It just sort of says as well about Deadwood. Again, you've got to agree. I mean, Reading don't want to fill the side. I think Billy Sharp would have been a good signing, but you could argue, well, Adkins offloaded Sharp the last time they got promoted anyway, so why is Billy Sharp going to sign for Reading, who, you know, Adkins is hardly going to tell him a story of, we'll get promoted and you'll play Premier League football. He'll turn around and say, well, actually, last time you had a chance to play him in the Premier League, you didn't.
Well, the hope is when you buy any player that you're going to buy him to come straight into the team, and it has been a thing, especially under McDermott, because of the money mainly, where you bought in players like Akpan, players that are always going to be fringe players. With TSR, you'd hope they'd bring in players that would go straight into the side, and they have players like Pogrebniak and the players that we signed in the transfer window. So they are trying to improve the side, and maybe you're right. If you're signing Billy Sharp and Adkins is in charge, he knows that he's not good enough for the Premier League because he's already dropped him when he had the opportunity.
Yeah. Right, on to the next email. It comes from Will, saying, "First link, Medeski out. Oh, wait, he already is. That'll be why we're all calling for Nick Hammond out. Pathetic. Maybe Medeski just needs to pull a bit further out." maybe until he's fully gone, we won't be blighted by his sloppy austerity residue. Sorry, I like this email. Poor Sir John.
That's an interesting one, that one.
McDermott was sacked seemingly on the pretense that he didn't sign enough decent players. We had decent quantity over the last couple of windows, just not enough quality. Assuming what swung it to join Reading for Nige was the promise of financial support so he could get that quality, I think we have seen that with the three lads we did bring in. But are the Reading board, Anton Zingarevich, etc., going to have to be an awful lot more realistic with what we can bring in? And will Nigel Adkins maybe be feeling a little bit high and dry after this window? You could hardly call this his squad at the moment. Looking forward to the podcast. Sure be right on form as usual." And so that's from Will. Thanks very much for that, Will. We're trying to do our best.
Well, the question is, was McDermott sacked because of his signings? I don't think he was. I think he was sacked because there was a disorganised shambles at the time.
Yeah, and they were showing no signs of progressive football.
And again, maybe if you're Anton and you've given the managers the reins to buy players, and he's brought in Akpan and Blackman and players that couldn't make it, maybe that's why he took more of an interest in signings. We thought, well, that didn't work for us. Let's try something different.
Well, I know that one of the sound bites they were putting out at the end of the last January transfer window was that the scouting network wasn't up to scratch, and they brought in Steve Head from Fulham to sort of enhance that. Maybe it's still, you know, it's going to take time to get up there, but, you know, right now they're still not bringing in the players. And he's right, this isn't Nigel Adkins' side. And that's what people have got to be patient. I was going to mention when we were talking about Yeovil, one of the things that disappointed me from Reading fans, you know, every fan's entitled to, you know, voice their opinion at games. They pay their money as much as me, you or anyone else. But anyway, fans, every time there was a sidewards pass or a backwards pass, I was shouting, get it forward, get it forward.
Yeah, patience.
And you're thinking, wait a minute, fans were almost screaming at McDermott because the fact that they were constantly hoofing the ball forward.
Yeah.
Suddenly, Reading players are trying to get the ball on the deck and they're getting barracked from the fans. And that can't be easy. I know players have got to be thick-skinned, but when you're hearing people shouting from the sidelines and getting frustrated because you are playing a backwards pass, you know, you've got to watch and look at how Swansea and Barcelona play. For every bit of highlight you see of them scoring a great goal, there's been
a lot of tedium.
Yeah, 60, 70 minutes of sideways passes, backwards passes. It's not always exciting, but you know, if that's the football you want to play, you've got to put up with it. So I think fans have got to be patient, or we will end up with an Adkins Mark II, Brendan Rodgers Mark II. But yeah, I don't really think this is his side at the moment, and it'll take a while for it to get moulded in his image.
But then there's the question again of investment, and you know whether he wanted Drenth, I think he wanted Bridgen Williams, but you know, would he have added more players to the side if he could? Yeah, he probably would have done. And he was probably told when he signed up that, you know, he would have a bit of cash to do that with. Because,
well, he wasn't going to come, was he, originally? And he made a U-turn, so he's obviously promised something. And we said last week, or I said anyway, that I'm surprised he hasn't brought in some players from Southampton that are his players that he brought there. Just because it will help the whole dynamics of the squad, because they will bring in players that they already know what they're doing, and they'll be able to teach the others to a certain extent.
Yeah, although, again, maybe it's a lot. Well, there might be two things with the Southampton thing. Number one is I don't think him and Southampton get on particularly well after the circumstance around his sacking. And the second thing is the type of players that Southampton will be looking to offload are probably, like we said with Sharp, the same players that Adkins was almost looking to offload. So again, maybe those Southampton players look at it and go, well, why do I want to uproot and then just be in the same situation 6 months later?
Yeah, fair comment.
So, you know, maybe, I obviously don't know if that's the case, but that might be a reason for it. Right, let's move on to some of the tweets then. We'll start with WB18. And he says, the best two words I can find to describe our transfer dealings are not good.
I can think of another two, but...
No, it's a family show. Hold back. Bobby Hall.
Lovely.
Sorry. Yeah. He says, beginning to realise how pointless it was to get so angry at Reading FC over transfers. I'm usually the eternal optimist, but in my defence, I was in the middle of a bidding war on a house, which I then went on to lose. Hashtag bad week? Bad week. Hashtag calming down. That's unfortunate. You see, it's not just footballers that lose out on these bidding wars.
And I will say to Bobby, if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be.
No, you'll find a new house. Don't you worry about that. Alex Forbes says, I love the pod on the site. I hope Adkins gets a couple of transfer windows and time to get his team and style. And Andy Charman says, Hammer's attempt to defend the indefensible was derisible and an insult to the fans. Anything from those three?
Again, Hammond's middle management, he gets told what to do and he does it. Simple as that.
Yeah. With the Adkins thing, as I said last week, this is Anton's Reading and Adkins is his man. You'd hope that he's not going to be a sort of Abramovich where it's just sort of flavour of the month, or you didn't get us promoted, or you didn't win a cup, see you, bye. I think he will get the time. Oh, I hope he gets the time.
I think if we win the European Cup, I won't worry so much.
Yeah. I don't think we'll be...
We'll get the LDV vans when we get relegated.
Yeah.
That'll do me.
Hey, no, it's the Johnson's paint these days, Johnny. Sorry. Come on, they pay good money for these things. Jack Pape says, would you want Hector back as third choice centre-back or leave him at Aberdeen for experience and get a loan in? I've got no confidence in Gorks. And Tom Robertson, Tyler's end writer, says one word sums up Yeovil and the window: uninspiring. Anything for those two?
Yeah, Hector, I haven't seen enough of him to say, can he step into a championship side? Again, he does need a year away, like a lot of young players do.
Yeah, I'd rather just get a loan and let him
progress.
He's shown flashes of it at Cheltenham and at Barnet. So
the other thing is with these loan deals, you know, it's not generally just like, oh, hi, Aberdeen, can we have him back now?
No.
You know, it might be that we have to take him back in January, or that it's for a whole year. So, you know, it might be that we want him back, but we just can't get him back.
Yeah, a few late tweets that came in. Thanks for all those, again, that sent them in. Joe Davey says, do you think we're not as good as we think we are, or do you think it'll be the same as the 2011-12 season?
Well, the answer is to that, how good does Joe Davey think we are?
Yeah. I mean, I
don't know what you think.
I think we've got a better squad than 2011-12, and if that squad went on to win the championship, maybe you've got to be patient and hope they click.
We have always been slow starters, and we've always got it together at the end of the season. Whether that was just McDermott, or whether it was the fact that if you do think about it, generally with the McDermott side, we lost a key player or we lost something key about the squad.
Yep.
And it took a few months to transition. Mm. If you think about it, and we've got a new manager who's got a new style of play. Perhaps that's going to take a bit of time to transition, and this is all hysteria.
And we're still in a much better position than we were the last time we won the league.
I would argue this is probably, in the history of Reading Football Club, one of the strongest squads they've ever had.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that's too a bolder statement either. Can you look back...
Can you believe, though, we did this podcast 10, 11 years ago. Could you imagine that we'd be sat around this table talking about, we've only signed a winger from Real Madrid, a USA international, and a former England left-back that's won the Premier League. That's an awful window. When we're talking about getting Paul Brayson, Ron Fleck, Jimmy Crawford, and players like that in. So, maybe time. I know you've got to move with the times, but...
Van der Quack, that was another one.
Elroy Cromie.
Elroy Cromie.
I think once all these transfer deals are done, we'll start getting on some things like Reading's worst 11, because I imagine plenty of people have their opinions on that one. And a couple of final tweets of the day. Where do Reading stand in the Championship now? Promotion still looking secure. Views on the shocking petition. That's from Tom. Timothy Dustman, who writes to us every week. Thanks for that. And Tom Welland says, it's not the lack of spend that irritates me. It's the spending of three promoted to the Prem squad that gets me. Shoulda, woulda, coulda?
Yeah, no, on that last note, I was reading yesterday's Times today because I'm behind the times, obviously. And I think in the last 5 or 6 years, we had the lowest net spend of any team that went up. So, you know, it is one of those things that you look back and you say, we should have done more, but that's all you can do, really.
But I'd be interested to see what our wage bill is in terms of the Championship. It's got to be one of the top three out of four, easily.
Yeah, it is a missed opportunity. The sad thing is, it's not just the last go at the Premier League. It was the time before that. Two times, you'd be just thinking, one or two more and we might survive. But, you know, it is shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Also, last time we got promoted, I believe we had one of the biggest wage bills then as well.
Yeah, well, we always do.
If you look at the Premier League, it's normally the teams with the biggest wage bills that finish in the top three or four positions.
Mm. And just to finish then, Tom, are you still confident of our promotion credentials? Just on the presumption then that, say we don't get any more loans in, do you think this squad's good enough to go up?
Honestly, I think right now it depends on Pavel Pogrebniak. If he comes back and decides that he can be bothered and decides not to leave warm downs after about 5 minutes, then by all means, I think we can do it, because he's a game changer. And if him and we've got Drenta and McCleary and Williams and Sissoko, you know, you look at that team and say, that's class.
I think I'm going to leave on a positive. I'm going to say, if you look at the start of the season, we've got 8 points. Two wins, two draws and a defeat. I think when you look at that, and for a team that hasn't clicked, and we've already said Atkins hasn't got his own men in, and as you go through a season, your team evolves completely. I mean, you look at a team that finishes this season, I bet it's a shadow of the team that started it. It always is, every year. So I'd be interested to see how well Reading progress throughout the season. If they can kick on and Atkins can get his ideas over and it starts clicking, which it will at some point, then I think Reading are still a major threat in this. Will they win the league? I think QPR probably will win the league now, just with the fact that they got some of the best players in it. But other than that, I think second, third, fourth was well up.
Yeah, I think it's very hard to say who'll get in that, you know, top two. And so QPR look very, very strong. But so did West Ham the year that, you know, that we went up last time.
Yeah,
so
actually West Ham probably were a Premier League side and they proved it the next year, but they couldn't do it in a Championship.
Exactly.
But so, they were big scalps, you know what I mean? They were big scalps.
And this year, we, you know, Forest have started really well. We've got Watford, obviously, who we've seen. You know, they've started very well. And then you've got the teams that will come out of nowhere, like Reading did, you know, teams like Swansea did in the past. There will be rogue teams. But, you know, as you said, I'm still confident we can get a playoff place. I think if this is the actual squad on what we know now, and if there aren't any loans or Sissoko, etc., I don't think it's quite top two, but I wouldn't rule it out. So I still think we're on course for a playoff place, and maybe more. And I still think that would be a successful season, as much as they put the PR bluster up.
If someone can start firing and Reading start scoring goals more regularly, they will be in the top four in our league.
Right, I think that just about wraps it up as far as we're concerned. Remember, if you want more insight and analysis, please head over to the Tyler's Den website. It's at tylersden.com. Hopefully you've gone there to get this podcast or through iTunes, wherever. But on the website, you can obviously read the post-match thoughts from Yeovil, the player ratings. As mentioned, the player of the month vote is on. Please cast your vote for that. We've also got Raw Hoops' tweets of the week, always entertaining. Some good bits of fun in there. We've got a loan report up, keeping an eye on the likes of Mikel Anderson and Michael Hector, how they're getting on. We're going to have my five thoughts from Yeovil, hopefully, by the time this goes out. And over the next couple of weeks as well, we'll have plenty of content up before and after the next games. And I suppose that brings us on to our next point. I don't think we're going to be recording next week because it is the international window. And as much as I'm sure we'd love to dissect the Oman game...
it's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. You know, if Reading turn around and sign three or four players in the loan window, maybe we'll get together.
Yeah.
But for the time being, it might be 2 weeks. It might even be three because I'm off on holiday in 2 weeks' time. So it might
be... I think he's got a test with Johnny Fordham's about.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah.
The show starts for him.
I've done a few. I'll show my time. Yeah, exactly. Well, no, I mean, we've spoken off the air. Hopefully, we will have a shout in a couple of weeks' time. We'll see what happens there. But yeah, do stay tuned to the Twitter feed and the website. We'll have plenty of updates close to the time. But that about rounds it up. So we're all off to see if we can go secure loan moves elsewhere. I've got my eye on a Sheffield Wednesday podcast.
Yeah, late bid for Johnny Ford. Yeah, but we couldn't get him on the phone, could we?
Paul's just missed international clearance to come over.
Oh, he's a free transfer. Don't worry about
that. Yeah, we'll try and get him another time. But thanks. As I said, if you do want to get in touch, you know all the contact details. Thanks for everyone that keeps listening. Your feedback's very much appreciated, and we'll hopefully see you all in a couple of weeks' time. So that's it from us.
Cheers.
Cheerio.
Cheers.
The Tylehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetylehurstend.com. Listening to Tylehurst End Podcast, the only podcast made by Reading fans for Reading fans.